With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Celtic Soul podcast with me, Andrew Millen. And you're all very welcome to episode 14. My guest on the show will be Australian Rugby League player Keith Galloway. This episode has been kindly sponsored by BC Services, Tax Consultants, Kentstown, County Meath. And I would like to thank Brian Cunningham for his continued support over many years. The powers that be at the FEI wanted Liverpool great Bob Paisley. But after yet another cock-up by leading officials, Ireland got big Jack Charlton. And what a brilliant cock-up it turned out to be. A working class hero who never forgot his working class roots and will always be remembered for his support of the miners' strike after he worked for a short time down the mines with his own father. A World Cup winner with England in 1966, a one club man playing his full career for Leeds United, where he played against Celtic and Bobby Murdoch, who he would pair in midfield with a young Graham Souness when he was manager of Middlesbrough. Ireland had never been to a major championship when Jack took over, but once we qualified for the Euros in 1988, the whole country became part of Jackie's army, including some staunch GAA men. The Glasgow Irish were celebrating when Ray Houghton, the boy from Castlemilk, put the ball in the English net. Celtic centenary boys Paddy Bonner, Mick McCarthy, Chris Morris would all represent Ireland under Jack, as would Tommy Coyne. I interviewed Ray Houghton a few years ago in Portlaoise, and the drive up and down to the gig with Ray was a joy, as he told me endless stories about the great era when Jack was in charge. Points, Euro 88, World Cups, the crack, open top buses, credit union loans, packed pubs, dancing in the street, a sea of green, and the snapper on TV. All memories that spring to my mind when I think of those years. Big Jack, RIP, thanks for the memories, the hangovers, and making us feel proud to be part of your army, making us proud to be a nation. Let's hope your legacy can inspire Stephen Kenny and the current Irish boys to qualification for the Euros. Here's how I got on earlier on when I chatted to Keith Galloway.
Keith Galloway can thank his dad for his love of Celtic. His dad was born in Scotland and emigrated to Australia, where he married his mum, who comes from good Irish stock, or so I'm informed. Keith played at the highest level of rugby league in Australia and finished his career recently with the Leeds Rhinos in England. Hello, Keith. Very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast.
Cheers, Andrew. Good to be on, mate.
So how has life been in lockdown in Australia?
Yeah, mate, it's we sort of, you know, coronavirus, I don't think it hit as bad, well, not yet anyway, as it did to Europe and obviously, you know, other parts of the world. So we had a little bit of a lockdown, but I've been working through it. I've got a job that's sort of been deemed as essential over here. So I've sort of worked through it, and yeah, things are sort of slowly coming back to normal. But, you know, there's rumours of a second wave coming and whatnot. So we'll just see what happens, eh?
So as I said, Keith, born in Australia, Scottish and Irish connection. Your dad's influence has obviously been to get you into the hoops, and I had the chance of watching them with you when you were playing for Leeds and you come up to Glasgow. What's the earliest memories of Celtic, and, you know, how were you influenced by your dad?
Yeah, mate, as a young kid, I was obviously interested in my dad's sort of background and Scotland and stuff like that. And but I just remember him talking about Celtic and stuff like that. And he wasn't a massive Celtic fan or anything like that. But, me and my brother sort of probably Henrik Larsson in those days, you know what I mean, back in those years. And ever since then, I've been a fan. And I was lucky enough to live over there playing rugby in Leeds in England there, and was fortunate and very lucky enough to get up to Glasgow and watch a fair few games, which was a lifetime ambition.
Couple of beers with the boys.
Yeah, mate, you were there.
I enjoyed a few beers with you. Some good and a good curry in the Bombay Blues.
Oh, yeah, it's good down there, right?
we did with some crack. Now, the fixtures are out. Well, obviously, we kick off behind closed doors, and I suppose for us over here, we will have the chance to get together and watch in the pub, maybe. Like over there, the normally for a game or for a big game, would you get out to the pub? Do you get down to a supporters club? Or?
Yeah, occasionally I'll go into the Sydney Celtic Supporters Club, a cheers bar there in the city. But a lot of the time it's watching at home pretty much watching at home, which is, you know, I've got a couple of young children and stuff like that. And, you know, I work a lot of weekends now with my job, so it gets a bit hard to get out and get to the bars. But when I do, it's mainly for one of the bigger games. I'll try and get into the city, into the supporters club.
And with the time difference, what time, say for a typical 3 o'clock kickoff, what time would that be like over there?
That would probably come on 3 o'clock. That would be about 2 or 3 in the morning. It is pretty hard times to sort of watch it. You know, when we play that other team on the other side of Glasgow, it's normally an earlier game for us down here. It's because it's a mid-time kickoff over there. It could be when daylight savings in our favour, the game could come on at 10 o'clock in early in the season. It starts at 10 p.m. for us, which is pretty lucky. But you know, when we go into winter here, it's a bit later. So it is unfortunate here in terms of watching soccer over there, but. Or football, you call it, yeah, but that's the way it is.
I spoke to Jim Riley, and I met him in Vegas, and I met him, he was in Thailand when we done the festival in March from the Sydney Supporters Club, and he was telling me a few bits and pieces, but seems to be a good supporters club there and plenty of interest in Celtic.
Yeah, well, mate, to be honest, I used to get there a lot more before I had children, but it's good crack in there, they're good lads, good people, and you know, they're massive supporters, you know, a lot of them go over to the convention in Vegas each year and stuff like that. And pretty hardcore fans, so it's a good vibe.
Is that where you met a friend of mine, Beena Breen?
Yeah. I've had plenty of late nights with Beena in there. He's a legend, Beena. I was pretty sad to see him head back home when he went back, but he's a good man. He caught up with him plenty of times in Glasgow and going to games when I was over there. So you know, he's a good laugh.
I like Beena. He's a good crack. One of the Logan Celtic boys, top man. But we'll probably get you to spill some beans on him later on in the interview. As we said, right, Keith, I'm no expert in rugby league, but just for the listeners, could you give the listeners an introduction to your childhood, your career in rugby league, and any other kind of feelers that might just give them an introduction to you? Because this is an audio interview. So, you know, we just want to get a feel for who you are.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, obviously I'm Australian, born in Sydney boy. So sort of rugby league's the biggest sport here in Sydney, in Australia. In Sydney, New South Wales and Queensland, rugby league's the main sport. Played it since I was 6, 7 years old. You know, went pretty well, made all the sort of junior rep teams. Started the Cronulla Sharks. So I got graded there professionally at the Cronulla Sharks. Played there for a couple of years and went over to the West Tigers. Played there for 10 years. While I was at the West Tigers, I was fortunate enough to play State of Origin, which is New South Wales versus Queensland, which is a massive game over here. It's probably the most televised event in Australia, if not one in the top three. So that's a massive sporting event in Australia. And that year, I was also lucky enough to play for Australia. So we actually went over to England and played against England and New Zealand in a sort of tri-series, tri-nations event over there. So rugby league is pretty much a sport played predominantly in Australia, in New South Wales, Queensland. It originated in the north of England, so it's big there, in pockets of the north of England and New Zealand. Outside of there, the Pacific Islands, the Tongas and the Samoas and Fijis, they've always played it and they're growing. But outside of those regions, it's not so much, it's not too big on a world scale.
It's a typical working class sport.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's sort of, you know, well, it came from all the mining towns in the north of England and things like that. So they sort of broke away from rugby union and rugby union over there and over here, it's pretty much a private school sport. sort of pretty much the so-called upper class sport, where all the kids from sort of wealthy families and they go to private schools play that. But and rugby league's always pretty much been the working class game.
Yeah, it's probably the same in Ireland, although there would be community teams, but generally rugby union would be seen as maybe kids that would have, there wouldn't be many, I suppose, working class kids who would be playing in the Ireland team or, you know, at Leinster or so forth. And maybe that's changing now, but there wouldn't be any sign of it. Whereas, I suppose, over here, boxing and soccer, and as you say, soccer, we say football, but, you know, and then we've got Gaelic sports as well. So we've hurling and Gaelic, which are the biggest, but recently, there's a few other sports have become a bit bigger because, you know, the influence of TV and so forth. But basically over here, I suppose our GAA is your rugby. Would rugby be the biggest sport in Australia?
Are you talking about AFL, like Australian AFL?
Yeah, well, we've got GAA, which is our biggest sport, right? But over there, you've got the AFL, which is Australian rules, which a couple of Irish boys go over and play. You've got rugby, both codes, and obviously you've got cricket. So, like, which is the big one over there?
So, New South Wales and Queensland are two states which are a rugby league, you know, very, very rugby league sort of states. Then the rest of Australia, like the Victorias where Melbourne is, and Western Australia, South Australia, they're all sort of AFL. Yeah, it's sort of certain, like New South Wales, Queensland rugby league, and the rest of the country is pretty much AFL. But New South Wales obviously is the biggest state. Sydney is the biggest city. And it's just how it is. I don't know how it started like that, but yeah, AFL's played in the other. But rugby league and AFL would be the two biggest sports. Cricket's a summer sport, so that's obviously played all throughout the whole of Australia.
And what about football or soccer, as you call it over there? Like, that growing, or is it a minority sport?
It is definitely growing. It's you know, we've sort of Socceroos have they're obviously not on, you know, they're not one of the top sides in the world, but it is growing. I remember as a kid, there would be rugby league fields everywhere. It'd be hard to find a soccer field. But now it's probably the other way around. A lot of young kids are sort of playing soccer. Soccer's grown at a grassroots level, where rugby league's probably not as big. So it'll be interesting to see what the future holds in that department.
Yeah, I've spoken to Scott McDonald. Obviously, he's back over there playing now. We done him on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. And I think he's really enjoyed it. His time back in Australia. But I think he's missing, not the weather, but I think he's missing the banter and maybe some of the crack he had in Scotland.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just totally different, mate. Obviously, the weather and everything's for, like, you can't compare it, you know. I remember taking my brother over to Glasgow. I took him to an Old Firm game. So we left summer here. It was hot as, and got over there, got to Manchester, then got a train up from Manchester to Glasgow. And it was like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. It was pitch black outside. He was going, "What the hell's going on here?" I go, "Mate, this is weird in the UK." It's sort of pretty much unheard of here, you know. Like, he couldn't believe it was pitch black at that time of the day. I said, but that's what winter's like. But, mate, the people over there and the banter and stuff's, you know, it's first class in the UK. So
I suppose to be close comparisons, like, obviously when you were down in Leeds, when you were playing with the Rhinos, a working-class sport, working-class team, you know, and then there wouldn't be a lot, like, when you come up then, and especially when you're knocking about with us in Glasgow, you know, it's a working-class group and points, banter. So, like, what was Leeds like, you know, from coming from Australia?
Yeah, mate, Leeds is, in terms of rugby league teams, Leeds is probably the only big city that has a rugby league or a top rugby league club. So it was a pretty good place to live. You know, it's a pretty big city, Leeds. There was plenty to do. People were unreal, mate. It was a really, really nice place to live. Everyone made you feel welcome. And countryside, you know, like, in obviously being a city boy living in Sydney, it's just a different lifestyle. Like, you drive out of the city, 10 minutes out of the city, there's castles. It's beautiful greenery. And I really enjoyed it, mate. It was a nice experience for a couple of years.
And then obviously it come to an end, injury has forced you out of the game. How hard has it been to adjust to, I suppose, getting back from being, you know, a high profile sports star to getting into the, I suppose, rejoining the rat race?
Yeah, mate, I was prepared for it. I knew it was coming. I knew when I signed to go over to the Super League over there that I'd be there for a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, and that would be my career done, you know. So it was the right. The timing was about the time I sort of expected to finish. I just did not expect to finish my career with two bad injuries. But, you know, sometimes that's the cards you're dealt in life. And, mate, I had a really good career, so I was ready to retire in my own way. But it's been all right, mate. I'm working and working here now in Australia, and, you know, I'm a father of two children. So yeah, I'm pretty busy now. So it's not too bad.
Do you miss the buzz?
I do a little bit, but I never liked the limelight, mate. I always struggled, not struggled, but I didn't like the attention being on me as a so-called, you know, professional rugby league player and whatnot. So I sort of enjoy just sort of being a normal sort of person now, to be honest.
So is that why you hung around with Ben O'Brien? Because he's so famous that, you know, he deflected the media away from you.
Yeah, he took all the attention away from me, mate. So it was yeah, that's what definitely why I hung out with him.
You broke into rugby league at a very young age, Vic, and obviously this is a podcast, but if you get a chance, have a look at Keith. He's a big boy and he's built like a brick shithouse. And obviously you've always been a big lad and rugby is a tough sport. But you broke in at 17.
I debuted pretty young as a player. So I was always a big kid, obviously. But I was actually at high school at the time. So I was 17, in year 12, which is your last year of schooling here in Australia. And it was towards the end of the year. And I sort of, you know, I was at the Cronulla Sharks and then the coach just took me aside. He goes, "Look, mate, I'm going to give you your debut this week." And it was so surreal. It was against the New Zealand Warriors. So it was, and that year they had a really, really strong team. You know, they're all big sort of Kiwi and Islander boys. So it was a bit daunting, but, you know, it was a pretty proud moment.
So that's the equivalent of, I suppose, one of the youth players breaking into the Celtic Force team.
Yeah, pretty much, you know. It's pretty much a young kid. I was in the junior levels getting graded in the top team for that match. And I finished the last eight games of the year. So it was, looking back now, mate, it's pretty big achievement and big honour. But, yeah.
So you played at the top level. You were telling me off air that like the Australian league would be probably just stronger than the English league. And then obviously to get your debut for Australia, to play for your country, was the highlight when you play like New Zealand, like, because that's, I suppose, the closest to a Rangers Celtic game.
I don't think anything compares to a Celtic Rangers game, obviously, with the history and the passion that sort of, especially from the fans and that. But if anything, it'd be like a New South Wales Queensland game. If you could compare it to anything, you know, that's two different states. And if you look at the history of those games, if anyone gets a chance, have a look at past games or State of Origin highlights and big hits and fights. And it's been full of that. There's so much passion in that game. But I was lucky enough to play one game, the New South Wales against Queensland in 2011. Unfortunately, we didn't get the victory, but it was a massive moment in my career. And also that year, I toured the UK, so we played against England and New Zealand, which are probably, you know, two big, well, the only big rivals of Australia. I suppose Tonga is growing. They're sort of becoming an international force at the moment. A lot of players with Tongan ancestry are pledging allegiance to their mother country. So they're becoming strong now. But yeah, definitely Australia or New Zealand in terms of you know, when you play for Australia, them two teams are fierce rivals as well.
Yeah, you talk about big hits. Just from doing a little bit of research on you, you got sparked out, did you, when you were only a young player in the game?
Yeah, so it was a pretty bad shot. It was like a flying elbow to my head. So I was knocked out. It was illegal. The bloke that done it copped about 17 weeks suspension. So it's one of the biggest suspensions in rugby league history. But it's not a good look for the game. But thankfully, those sort of things don't happen anymore.
But you bounced back anyway.
Yeah, mate. I got back up, mate. That's what life's all about, isn't it? You've got to keep getting up.
Now, excuse my ignorance, right? But in football, once you play senior for your country, you can't change country. But you did have a chance to, you wanted to, and you had a chance to represent Scotland. How did that come about, and how does that work if you've played for Australia?
Yeah, so in rugby league, it's because it's not in rugby league, they have a thing called first tier nations, which are Australia, New Zealand, England, and I think Tonga might be one now, but it's you can't switch teams between those four teams, but you can join a developing. You can pledge allegiance to a developing nation, a rugby league nation, which is obviously Scotland's a developing, classified as a developing nation. Ireland, Wales might be. All these sort of, there's a lot of teams, a lot of countries that are playing rugby league, but they're obviously not at the level of the Australia, New Zealand or England. So, and obviously having Scottish ancestry, I wanted to try and play for them after I played for Australia. And to be honest, I wasn't going to make the Australian team again. So I thought it'd be a good chance to sort of play for Scotland and try and help them boost their sort of national game. But injuries were unlucky to me, so I didn't get the chance to do that, but it was something I wanted to.
So you couldn't fulfil that dream, but as you said earlier on, you got the chance to travel up to Glasgow, take in a few matches, and you then flew from Australia with your brother to take in a Rangers game in the cold after leaving the sunshine of Australia. You'd been up before. what did your brother think of the whole, you know, was that his first time coming to a game?
No. So where did my brother Ryan, he came over. So I played for Australia 2011. We toured and Ryan and Dad actually went up and stayed in. So they based themselves in Scotland while I was with the Aussie team in England. So he came and went. But that would have been October, November time, I think. Yeah, no, he'd never been to a Celtic game before, and he's a massive fan like myself. So I was going over there. I was going, and I said to him, yeah, because we both sort of go for Liverpool as well, and I had a connection to get a Liverpool tickets to a Liverpool game. But obviously, once I told him I can get a ticket to the Celtic Rangers game, I think that sort of won him over by flying over with me for a couple of weeks to come watch it.
It's so different, I suppose. Glasgow's so different to Sydney. Well, not just the weather-wise, but they're just different cultures. And when you go to see Celtic, them games are just, they stand out. As you said earlier on, nothing compares to a Celtic Rangers game in rugby league. When you come over and you get caught up in the whole couple of days, for us, we're so close, being in Ireland, or our mates that live in Scotland. When we get over, like we can look forward to another one. But obviously, you're living in Australia, it's so far away. It must be a special thing. Like, you must just take in everything for those couple of days.
Yeah, it certainly does. I was lucky enough to be in the Celtic again at Ibrox for a couple of games. And, you know, we beat them pretty convincingly when I was there. When I took my brother up, we were at Parkhead. And unfortunately, it was a draw. But the atmosphere and, you know, the build-up and, you know, you wake up, you might have a couple of beers before the game and you're pretty much at the game. And then, yeah, it's just the adrenaline, you know, walking to the game and everything about it. It's pretty amazing atmosphere.
And can you draw any comparisons to playing in a big rugby league game, like the buzz?
Well, state of origin, that's massive. Like the whole country stops for that. That's a big thing. But, you know, I played a couple of semi-finals. Unfortunately, I didn't make a grand final. But they were big, big events, like the media's, all the attention's on those sort of games. So if anything, you could probably compare it to a state of origin or a finals match or something like that.
You'd have an idea of what the pressure that the Celtic players are under going into it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know what it's like in Scotland. It's Celtic, the biggest club. And then obviously they're next. And then after them too, it's a fair way. All the attention's sort of on them too when they play each other. So yeah, the media like that's, I sort of could imagine, and I sort of felt it a little bit, but probably not on their level.
Obviously, you played at a high level, the highest level you can play in rugby league. And then as a fan of Celtic, you can understand the pressure the players are under. But then it must be great as well that it's something that, you know, you're not in the media spotlight. No one knows much about rugby league in Glasgow. So Keith Galloway can be Keith Galloway. He's not Keith Galloway, the rugby league player that maybe was under scrutiny if he went out for a beer in Australia, in Sydney. Whereas, so now you can just you've no hair, but if you had, you could let it down.
Got hair on my beard, but yeah, definitely, mate. The scrutiny that rugby league players are in here in Australia is crazy. They're just in the paper. They're getting the spotlights on them. Like it's. I actually feel sorry for players these days playing the game because the media's watching them like a hawk. But going back to that, obviously, how I said earlier that you know, I hated the spotlight and everything. Going up there and, you know, no one knowing who you were and stuff like that, it was awesome. Obviously, like, I stood out because I was, you know, a lot taller than most of you Irish and Scottish lads up there. But it was awesome to sort of just blend in and be one of the boys and, you know, just be a supporter and get amongst it, you know.
Yeah, I remember getting a picture with you and we were in the Arthur Bar in the hotel and I'm no shrinking violet. I'm not the smallest man in the world, but it's nice to be with someone bigger than me. But then there's a classic picture of yourself and little Tim McCann from Armagh. The Tim's probably the smallest fan I know, and you're the biggest fan I know. So that's a quality picture. I must actually look that out and get it up on the social media for the listeners to have a look at. We had a great crack, and like you just fitted in. Like, you know, there was no, obviously, you were a bit more noticeable, you know, when we were walking up to a door of a pub or whatever. But you just fitted in and enjoyed yourself. And I suppose it's the same when you go out to watch a match in Sydney. But you think, like, social media now has, okay, a lot of players use it and a lot of celebrities use it for their own advantage as well. But back in the day when I interviewed players, they were comfortable sitting in a pub with the fans, having a drink or a sing-song or what. But now the modern-day players, they just can't do anything because at any stage someone can video them, someone can take a picture of them. Within seconds, it's all over the world.
Yeah, exactly, mate. It's a shame. But I guess, yeah, it's just the way society is these days. And Yeah, I wouldn't like to sort of be under that intense spotlight or whatnot, what it's called these days. But unfortunately, that's the way it is. So I suppose players have to adapt to it.
And just on that, like if you were out with Beano, your old pal, and you've been out on a session like in Sydney, you watched the game with the Sydney Celtic Supporters Club. Like, would you have to get offside then, or would you be aware? Look, I can't really be. Seem to be, we just have to go off somewhere else or, you know, keep a low profile.
Yeah, to a degree. I pretty much, when I was with them, we pretty much just stayed at the cheese bar and everyone was pretty sound in there, you know, like it was just have a few drinks in there and let the night go away. But it's a lot worse these days than it is back then. So, like I said, I feel sorry for players these days who, you know, it would be pretty hard to sort of go and have a beer and try and enjoy your night out these days.
Which is a shame, really, because I know over here, as I said, I was speaking to the older players, like, you know, they enjoyed it. They always enjoyed it. But now the younger players now, and as well as that, the club, you know, the club, like, they don't want them to be really out socialising because they don't want them to get a bad rep, you know, and bring the name of the club down or whatever. So that kind of, you don't really, like, I suppose the players from Henrik's time and that are probably the last players that, you know, you would see out and about or mixing with the fans. The more modern day player now is just so distant. And with Celtic moving out to Lennox Town, when they used to train in Barrowfield, people had a chance of a glimpse of them or whatever. So now really all they have to meet their heroes, especially the kids, is on a match day for maybe 10, 15 minutes after the game. What was it like when you were playing? Like, you know, what was the relationship with the fans?
Yeah, look, you know, fans would come in and watch you train and, you know, you'd have signing sessions and days where you sort of be designated for the fans to come along and meet players and whatnot, and you know you'd see players at after match functions and things like that. So I suppose you know it was probably a bit more, you know, I could imagine what it's like over there in terms of you know, Celtic, a massive club and everything like that. But I suppose we're probably more a bit more when I was a player a bit more approachable for fans to come and meet or have photos with and get to know. But it has changed a fair bit though. Players are under the spotlight and, you know, someone could take a photo and make it out to be something it's not, and, you know, the papers get a hold of it and stuff like that. And yeah, some players just get crucified in the media these days too.
And when you were playing over there, was predominantly Australian players, or do any players come over from England or from elsewhere?
We had a few English lads, but yeah, it's predominantly Aussies and Kiwis and Islanders, really.
Yeah, no, I just wondering because I'd imagine coming for some players come to Celtic, and obviously because it's such a big club, it takes them a long time to settle in and get the feel of what Celtic is all about and the pressure that's on. You have to win every game, you know. Finishing second runner-up in the league is just the same as finishing last. It's no good. You've got to be top. Celtic are under pressure every year for the top dogs. And we were just speaking recently, like one of the lads was saying to me yesterday, after he listened to the Matt McLaughlin podcast, he was saying, you know, all the young fans should really listen to this because it wasn't always successful and we should be so thankful of the success Celtic are having now.
Yeah, mate. I remember a lot of times when, you know, we're not winning titles and getting beat by Rangers in games and things like that. So it's this sort of past 9 years, hopefully it's 10 and going on. It's remarkable. It's a remarkable run. You know, we've got to appreciate it and enjoy it because it's a pretty special effort. And, you know, I think as fans, we just got to appreciate how really special it is.
Yeah, when we ran the festival in Thailand in March, there was obviously a lot of Aussie-based Celtic fans and a couple from New Zealand. And it's only then you really get to, when you get time to sit down and have a beer with them, you can see, we all know Celtic's a worldwide club and it's recognisable all around the world. But it's only then you get, like, you sit down with some of the boys and, like, the dedication from so far away to, you know, run these clubs and host events and do charity events and everything. So it's so lucky that there is a community there, a Celtic community within Sydney and within other places in Australia. And very seldom Celtic will travel that far. But they did travel with Neil Lennon when he was his first stint in charge as manager. How important, like, is that trip for the likes of you and fans that are based down in Australia?
It was massive. It was huge. You know, they got a massive crowd at the game and everything. I think, you know, you sort of, especially for people like me, myself, who are Australians, sort of growing up in Australia, obviously got, you know, Scottish background and whatnot, but you probably don't think you're going to get that chance to sort of watch Celtic in the flesh. or, you know what I mean, have them on your doorstep. So it's, you know, a lot of, obviously there's a lot of Irish and Scottish and expats that live here who've obviously gone to Celtic games, as you know, in the past, but it was huge. You know, you see Celtic jerseys and stuff everywhere in Australia. You see people, you know, you bump into people all the time wearing Celtic clothes and whatnot. So they're a huge club.
When the news broke that they were coming over, it must be some buzz.
Oh yeah, mate. How long ago was that now? The 2011. That's a long time ago now. But yeah, it was a massive buzz. It was huge. Hopefully it happens again soon at some stage. You know?
Yeah, I remember speaking to Tomo about it, and he said, so it was a long journey over, but they were looked after. They offered business class or whatever, you know. He said they were looked after. And then, obviously, Scott was on the podcast, and he was captain, I think, then. So that must have been a huge honour for him, because he grew up as like you, you know, with a Scottish background. And to go back as captain of Celtic and captain the team in his country of his bed must have been some buzz for him.
Oh, I would have been, mate. And, geez, how good was he at Celtic too, man? He was definitely one of my favourite players too. Obviously, having that Australian link, you know, but he scored some massive goals for us, obviously. So,
oh, he did, yeah. And, like, I suppose the first one to come was Viduka, and a quality player, but obviously it was when John Barnes was there and Henrik was injured, and there was a few bits and pieces, and he didn't maybe have the contribution that we thought he would have. And then Scott comes along, who, I suppose, you know, he wasn't very popular with the Celtic fans before he arrived, but he became popular with his goals. And what a season he had in his first season. I think he was top scorer. He was nominated for player of the year. I think Aidan McGeady won it that year. So, like, for him to come, and he was very realistic and honest when we done the podcast, because he thought his chance had gone at that level. Then he got a break at Motherwell, obviously scored the goals. And then he said he never thought Celtic would come knocking on the door because of the goals he scored against them. And then he came and he grabbed it with two hands, two feet, jumped in and loved his time there. Obviously left a little, I suppose, maybe a little early under Tony Mowbray. But his interview was brilliant and so honest. For him to get the position he did at Celtic and to score all the goals, it must have got built the profile even more of Celtic in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. He, you know, obviously having an Aussie playing over there, he's sort of, Celtic got a run on sport on the news and the sports sort of sports news section a fair bit. So it definitely built the profile, and you know, everyone pretty much kept tabs on Celtic because he was there, you know.
Yeah, no, you had been back. You'd got a chance to see Celtic in the flesh in Glasgow before you transferred to these Rhinos, or was it?
No, so Celtic came out 2011. I actually went to a meet and greet with Neil Lennon. Who else was there? Jared Ledley and Sean Maloney at the Supporters Club. But that was actually the time when I was playing for State of Origin for New South Wales, so I couldn't actually get to the game because I was in camp. But yeah, the first game I actually saw Celtic play was against Rangers at Hampden in the cup semi final. I think it was the year before they got promoted to the top league again, and we lost on penalty shootout at Hampden.
Yeah, Ronnie Delia was that what manager then?
Yeah. That was my first ever Celtic game. Yeah, so it wasn't the best start, but there was, you know, every game after that was pretty sound.
So it's an unbelievable time now to be a Celtic fan. Looking back at the nine in a row, three managers, three trebles, plenty of silverware, players coming and going. We've made big money signing. We brought players in for very little. So the scouting system's been brilliant. Big Virgil van Dijk now is one of the greatest players in the world at the moment. Victor Wanyama, Dembele, all sold on for big profits. And then so many memories from all those games, the results and players. What players stick out for you, and what results stick out for you during that nine in a row?
Scott Brown. I love Bruni. Just his intensity and everything, you know, everything he does for the club. The captain, he's just the leader. You know, he's just in the middle of everything. Obviously him. I love Dembele. He was unreal. Watching him at Celtic was, you know, I got to see him in the flesh, obviously, when I went up to watch him. He was something special. I think he's pretty much close to being world class. He's going to compete at the highest level. Being there, you know, like, Edwards, he's class. Tommy Rogic, obviously another Aussie. Being able to sort of, you know, being an Aussie Celtic fan and watching him play, and you know, he does some special things. But just, yeah, mate, just being able to watch him lift trophies and be the best in the country, you know.
Was it everything you thought it would be when you come over, when you come up to the games, you know, the atmosphere before the games, during the games, after the games, the banter, the pubs? Was it everything you thought, or was it different?
It was mainly, well, before and after games, it was mainly with you and all your crew, you know, the Artos. It was a good laugh, mate. It was awesome. Walking into sort of Celtic Rangers games and, you know, seeing the police barricades and the fans not getting anywhere near each other. You know, in Australia, in rugby league, if your best mate goes to the other team, you go to the game together and, you watch the game. You sit next to each other and have a beer and have a laugh and whatnot. But it's just, it's tribal and it's just so intense over there. So, yeah, it's pretty amazing atmosphere.
And you mentioned Tom Rogers there. Tom, I suppose, won a talent competition, basically, to be a footballer. You know, he won one of these soccer camp, whatever competitions. That's how he became, you know, I suppose, his first break. What's it like there? Like, has he a high profile in Australia? You know, is he in the news a lot?
Well, I definitely think if you're a sort of, you know, like a soccer football fan that, you know who he is, you obviously know who he is and whatnot. Like I said earlier, soccer doesn't, well, football as you call it, doesn't get the profile that rugby league gets here. And if you open the sports section, the first sort of like, you know, first three or four pages will all be rugby league, then soccer might get a page. So, but if you know, you definitely know who Tom Rogic is if you're a soccer fan or a sports fan, because he pops up and, you know, obviously him playing for Celtic sort of pops up on the sports programs a fair bit.
And Scott McDonald's up with Brisbane Roar now. Is there a soccer team in Sydney?
Yeah, there is. So there's Sydney FC and there's Western Sydney as well. I don't watch too much of the Australian League, to be honest, but you know, they're two of the biggest clubs in the country though.
They're in the top flight.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, so Sydney FC is the original team, and then they're sort of from my part of Sydney, which is sort of like, and then Western Sydney started a team, which is sort of Western Sydney. So then Sydney FC and Western Sydney have a pretty intense sort of matches against each other now.
And finally, Keith, I can't let you go without getting some gossip on Beena.
Beena, jeez. What can we say about Beena, mate? We've got to keep it G-rated, don't we?
We have to keep it generally rated, yeah. We can't give him too much stick, you know. I thought you would have been able to drop something. He's told me a few about you, but I can't say them now.
mate, he's a top lad, mate. I'll let him off lightly. He's a bit hard to understand at times, isn't he? Especially after he's had a few, but he's a good laugh. That strong northern accent, mate. So, but no, he's good. I actually miss him, mate. He's a good lad. We still speak pretty regularly, so he's a good fella.
He's top boy. He's top boy. I love getting a few beers with Beena. Keith, it's been a pleasure to chat. It's been a long time. Hopefully, you can come back on and chat to us again. But now that you're retired from the game, maybe we might see it in Thailand in 2022. The festival.
Well, yeah, mate. That sounds a bit more feasible to get there than sort of all the way over there. And the weather might be a bit better too, mate.
Scott McDonald's talking about coming as well. So, you know, the invitation's going out now. So keep that free in your diary. And hopefully we'll have it. Once we get over the COVID, we'll have it all sussed and all planned out for 2022. So Paddy's Day in Thailand. Make it a day.
Sounds good, mate. I'm there.
Keith, as I said, a pleasure. We'll talk again. And hopefully we can talk during the 10 in a row season. And hopefully we do that 10 in a row. And Scott Brown.
We will. We'll get there, mate.
And as you said about Scott Brown, wouldn't it be just great to see him lifting that trophy again, you know, 10 in a row. What a time to be a Celtic fan.
Oh, mate, it's awesome, mate. We've really got to enjoy these times because it's, mate, the players on the pitch are doing a remarkable job and, you know, we'll keep backing them. The fans always there as well, mate. They're the best fans in the world, so I'm really enjoying it.
Well, listen, Keith, as I said, thanks very much for talking to us and we'll talk to you soon. Hail, hail.
Cheers, mate. Hail, hail.
Thanks to Keith for taking time out to chat to us today. It's always interesting to chat to Celtic fans from around the globe and I would like to wish Keith all the best for his retirement from a very tough sport. Thanks once again to everyone who visited our website celticfanzine.com and bought some of the Celtic Soul Clobber and a couple of fanzines sold as well the weekend, so thank you very much. You'll be the talk of the terrace when you get the new t-shirts on. All the weekend's orders have been dispatched and keep an eye out for new designs and new lines coming within the next number of weeks. Your continued support means we can continue to create free content, both written and spoken, and we are really looking forward to getting back to doing some live shows when it's safe to do so. The podcast is available on all platforms, Apple, Acast, Spotify, etc. So please subscribe and follow us so you never miss an episode of the Celtic Soul Podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Thanks again to our sponsor, Brian Cunningham from BC Services. If your business or supporters club would like to sponsor an episode, please get in touch. The email is info@celticfanzine.com. And once again, I have to thank my producer, Ronan McQuillan. Top job as always. The most important people are the listeners, and without them, there is no show. So thank you so much. Keep the comments coming in, and don't forget to let us know your story and who you'd like us to get in the podcast. We are looking forward to doing some face-to-face interviews when travel restrictions allow us. It has been a pleasure to chat to everyone through the great technologies we have now, but nothing beats face-to-face. I'm sure it'll be a good excuse for myself and our guest and Ronan to have another pint. The podcast will be back on Friday with episode 15, when we will be paying tribute to Jack Charlton, a working-class hero who never forgot his roots. Played against Celtic, won a World Cup and took Ireland to three major competitions when we were all part of Jackie's army. Celtic are back in action this week, and it's hard to believe what has come and gone since we left Celtic Park back in March after we beat St Mirren. We have no pre-season trip to France with the players this time, but we can watch on TV. Celtic kick off on Thursday against Nice at 5:15 p.m. The game will be shown on Premier Sports and also on Celtic TV for non-UK Ireland subscribers. And I have to say, I'm looking forward to sitting down to watch it. Keep the faith and stay safe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.